Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, indeed. Let's all panic. Welcome to Left Ahead. I would like to say this week's, but I've been hitting and missing. So some weeks I have two, and some weeks I have three, some weeks I have none. Anyway, welcome. This is Mike Ball. I blog, of course, at Left Ahead and Harumph. Well, my sister tells me that I overanalyze. She's long said that. Muticide. I'm looking at America's panic and America's plague of fear and murder, some by cops, a lot by cops, come actually. And what's it coming from, and what do we do about it? And I see, you know, pictures going back to 9/11, through the terrorism thing, through our new obeisance to authority figures. I see it all in one piece. So let's get into it a little bit, and you can decide what you want to think about it and what you might want to do about it. I think there are some solutions, and I have some support. I found some support yesterday, in fact. It was the Jamel Bowie, the chief political correspondent of Slate, had a nice piece entitled Lethal Force as the First Resort. I'll put a link onto that in the Left Ahead post on this thing. It's in Slate magazine, where he's the guy. So take a look at his, because he gets into the same stuff I do in some ways. He doesn't go quite as far-ranging as I intend to, but he sees some of the same things, so it's just nice that at least there's one other person out there thinking along those lines. So what do we have, and what's been going on, and how long has it been going on, and what is to be done? So we changed as a nation on the attacks on the World Trade Towers. There are lots of stuff going on. We've always been kind of panicking about the people coming to get us. We're always sure about that. I laugh about Fort Warren here in the Boston Harbor. They built that because they just knew that everybody in Europe was going to come over, and they were going to invade the United States. And, of course, where they would have to invade it would be Boston, the most important, you know, greatest city in this country. It never was. It never was the capital. It never was the economic center. But anyway, but it was like, you know, the exceptionalism of Boston. And they built this fort out there, and nobody ever came. And they didn't come in the Civil War, and they didn't come in World War I, the Spanish-American War. They didn't come in World War II. They didn't come in Korea. And Fort Warren is out there, and it's got George's Island. And it's got, you know, it's a nice fort to jump around in, but they've taken out all the guns because they were never fired in anger. They use them for little target practice just because they had them. And spent a lot of money on it, but it was a Civil War fort, and it was a jail for Confederate officers and enlisted men. But it was never, you know, they never came for Boston. But we saw that after 9/11, Americans were in a panic again, and throughout the country, it was all every little damn town in the middle of the West, middle of no place. They're just going to say, well, we need lots of money and we need lots of armaments because when the terrorists come, they're coming here because this is a great place. And again, it was exceptionalism. So the idea is to be whatever, you know, pissant Ohio is going to be is so wonderful and so bucolic and just so typical of America that this is where the terrorists would come. They want to strike here just to show they could do it. And that's crazy talk. But it's not unusual. There are thousands of places in the United States that think that way and act that way and request it, and they're sure of it. And we've seen that a lot of times in a lot of places. And we saw a bad thing, a big cultural shift after 9/11, and we see it every damn time we try to get into an airplane. And the TSA thing, which there's no evidence that they keep us safe at all, you know, pulling off little folding knives from people's hands or taking their shampoo really doesn't keep us safe. And there's no evidence that they foil bombers. I mean, 9/11 aside, you know, if they've screened them up in New Hampshire and in Boston, I don't know that they would have grabbed the box cutters or whatever else, or if people would have used their hands. It doesn't make any difference. There's no evidence that the TSA is keeping us safe at all. What works, we know, is that what the Israelis do when they send their spy people, their Secret Service people, to the airports, and they sit down with people and chat with them, and they find people who are suspicious, act suspicious, and they pull them aside and they question them, and they find people. They actually do stop things in places where it matters, where there are lots of terrorists, and they do that. But we don't do that stuff, and we should, because we wouldn't have to take off our shoes. We wouldn't have to be humiliated with people grabbing our crotches and doing other things. But what it amounts to is we've gotten very used to it, and we simply obey all these people. And those clowns aren't even armed. But we just do it as we do authority figures. And when people say, well, you don't do this, or the terrorists have won, well, you look at this. This is where how the terrorists have won. When Americans say, yes, sir, I will do whatever you say, and they give up their liberties, they give up their individual freedoms to say, yes, because we just can't be too safe. Because if, we slack off for a second, something terrible is going to happen, and then wouldn't you feel awful? And we are giving it all up. And so I would suspect that the more philosophical of the terrorists out there would like that idea, would like it a lot. You think that the things they have done and the things they appear to be capable of doing would make Americans shiver and give it up. And it's happened. And we saw it. Well, here in Boston was one of the worst examples. In 2007, the Turner Broadcasting people, one of their cartoons, the Aqua Teen Hunger Force, put out some promotional pieces in a number of cities in the United States. They look like the Light Bright toy, and they put them up, on lampposts and bridges and things. And there's advertisement for their Moonanites and their cartoons. And the rest of the country took it in stride. And the other cities said, oh, yeah, it's not kind of junk. And they took them down. They tossed them away. That was easy. Not in Boston. No. It was the city police, the state police, the attorney general. They got all crazy, and they shut down bridges, and they closed everything, and it was like a panic, and they told us all that we were under assault, and it was crazy stuff. And even after it was discovered that these were just toys that people put up, the attorney general never apologized. She held to her guns, to use the expression, and she said, we were right to do this. We were protecting people. It was necessary. It wasn't at all necessary. And all the cities showed it wasn't necessary. And the other people were mature about it and smart about it. And we weren't. We were emotional, and we were crazy about it. And it's just too much. And it's, never forget. And I think we won't forget. But, that attorney general went on to run and lose for governor. She tried that. But she was popular enough to get the Democratic nomination, and even with her crazy Moonanite thing. So it speaks badly of hick towns in the Midwest. It speaks badly of Boston that they would panic on these things. We saw that recently in Los Angeles. There are threats called into several major cities, particularly New York and Los Angeles, to their schools. And New York said, not credible, and ignored it. And the L.A. school chief talked to the chief of police, and they decided to shut down the entire thing, sent home 7 million kids in this jive. And it, again, shows, complete lack of wit and an extremely emotional drama queen attitude. And it shows, that people have just spooked us to the point where they control us. And the other part of it is, of course, we allow the control to authority figures. We obey the officers with guns. We obey the officers without guns. We do whatever they say because, after all, they're in charge, and we wouldn't want to be one of those people who causes a problem because we were just being flippant about it, would we? Well, yeah. If we're American, if the way we were raised, if you're a boomer and you grew up on cowboy movies and World War II movies, and you grew up with right and wrong, and you grew up thinking Americans have got guts. Well, I don't know about that. And we look here again in Boston after the marathon bombings. They were the two, and then one of the bombers were on the loose, and the orders came down through the governor. It was the police chiefs in the towns, like 10 to 15 miles around, and our governor and the state police, and they all said, "Stay in your houses, hide." They paralyzed like 4 million people. Just, and the phrase is "shelter in place." I mean, that's okay if you are, you know, hiding in the root cellar from a tornado, but to, you know, millions of people shelter in place because there may be one bad guy out there. And of course, there is an irony there too. And the shelter in place people aren't going to admit that one much, but the hiding brother who had gotten away, the Sarnoff brother, was discovered when the order was lifted and the people began roaming around, and the guy went in his backyard and saw that his cover on his boat had been moved, and went in and saw the other guy, and they were able to get him when there was there's no sheltering in place. And it was destructive. It was the wrong thing to do. It was the emotional thing to do. And somehow, out of this entire episode with the Boston Marathon bombing, we see hats and T-shirts and sweatbands, and they say, "Boston Strong." And I got to say, from the way the Bostonians reacted and obeyed everything they were told and cowered, it's Boston Snivel, Boston Gutless. It's really a shame. And we've seen that not only in Boston, but we may be the worst in the country, because we've shown from the Moonanites through the bombing that we're ready to give it up. Until recently, when there were threats on the city, and the Boston police seemed to take their lead from New York City this week. There were threats made to Boston or through the New York City Police Department about Boston, and the cops in both cities looked at it and thought about it and said, "There's no credible threat." And so they didn't do it. They didn't panic this time. So I'd hope that we're getting over it. And it's a little hard to say, but I've got to say that the proclivities are there, the two of them, being ready to cower and panic, and giving up your liberties and obeying authority figures just blindly. Those are in there. And then goes the other aspect. This is where my sister may not like what I think about this. We grew up lots of cops around. My mother ran Red Cross chapters, and there were cops in the family, and I liked cops. I was rode ambulances and helped people, and I was first aid instructors, and I did lots of stuff, and I knew lots of cops, and I liked cops. But I got to say, it's when I got to be an adult, and I met crooked police, and apparently there are many, many, many who take bribes, and they go up to the butcher shop and load up their trunk full of sides of beef and stuff. I mean, that's real common. And I've met cops who do that and told me how to do it, and just use my name. And that's one thing. But now what we're seeing is murderous cops, and we've been seeing it now for a long time. And it's god-awful. It's terrible enough when these concealed carry people, particularly those in stand-your-ground states, murder people. And then they get by with it. I'm saying, "Oh, well, he was tall and I felt threatened. He looked at me funny," and that's supposedly a justification for murder. And in some cases, the prosecutor has not pressed charges. In other cases, these people have faced the charges and the grand jury hasn't indicted. Or if they go to trial, they never go to jail. They're given all, "Oh, yeah, well, this was justified." And it isn't justified. Murdering people because you don't like the way they looked at you, that's not cool. But now cops are doing it everywhere. It is so common in Missouri, in Cleveland. I mean, Tamir Rice, this 12-year-old kid had a plastic gun, and the cops are saying, "Oh, well, he was reaching for his waistband, so he's going to pull out the gun, and we warned him, he didn't do anything." And yet the video shows the cops pull up, guy jumps out of the squad car and immediately begins shooting the kid. There was no call for him to lay down his plastic gun. There's nothing out there. There was no chance for him to respond if there had been a call. It was murder, but there was no indictment. The grand jury said, oh, yes, well, clearly the officer felt threatened. He was justified. No, he wasn't. And the cops in that case and so many others, no, they're not. And that's what we have to deal with, is there is now a cultural shift where far too many police officers break the mold of all the good guys, the ones I grew up with. And they aren't the gutsy cops who say, all right, I put on my badge and put on my bulletproof vest. I go out there and, every day's a risk. They're going to say, if anything the least bit bad happens, if anything looks at all threatening, I'm going to use my taser or my gun without question. Is, go first. This is like Jamel Bowie's lethal force as a first resort. And that seems to be what far too many police officers and police forces do now, is they go ahead and kill somebody and knowing that they're going to get off. And it's almost 100% sure. There's like two cops this year have been indicted after dozens and dozens of murders. I mean, how do you do that? And it is not acceptable. But what is happening here is there is a mind shift, and the bad cops, the ones who use their badge and guns to live out their drama queen fantasies, they're getting by with it. And there is bad culture, and what we have to do is change that. And ideally, of course, the police chiefs around the country could change that today. If they tell their men and women in uniform, you have to absolutely justify whatever you do. You have to defuse a situation. You've been trained to do that, and that's your job as you go into a bad situation, and it may be a little risky for you. But you have to go in, and you protect and serve. You act like a cop, and you go in there, and you calm things down. But, it's just going in there and saying, oh, well, I didn't like the way he looked at him, so I had to kill him because I felt threatened. And that's not acceptable. And it is not acceptable for a private citizen, and it certainly shouldn't be acceptable for a police officer. So this is not James Bond. It's not a license to kill. They have the authority of law, and they have the power of a sidearm. But, using that instantly and killing people is not acceptable. And you say, well, how do we change that? And if you can't get the police chief to change them automatically, you put pressure on the governors and the mayors to put the word down. And then you put the pressure on the prosecutors and the judges. Police chiefs, prosecutors, and judges have to look at this thing and say, okay, game's up. No more of this. When the police are clearly in the wrong, we're going to prosecute them. We're going to send them to jail. They'll lose their badges. They'll lose their guns. They'll lose their pensions. And that's the way to go. I mean, that's what police are forever saying. Well, the only way you can stop these bad people is with deterrence. Well, you got to do it with these bad people too. When the cops are the bad people, you got to deter them, and you can deter them. But it's got to be a concentrated effort, and it has to go with the prosecutors and the judges as well as the police chiefs. And that's where we can step up, and we can make it known in our cities and towns and states and let them know that we don't want this. And I think the nation is past being fatigued with bearing children, particularly small black children who just get shot to death. And their grandmothers, 55-year-old grandmothers out there, getting shot just because the cop was trigger happy and wanted to put, that poor kid got, plugged with 16 bullets. If a policeman honestly does feel threatened and really has to feel that he can shoot something, I mean, one or two shots, ideally in a leg, not in the head, not in the torso, can stop that. And you can send somebody to the hospital rather than to the morgue. And that's got to be the new standard. And the prosecutors have to look at that. The police chiefs have to look at that. The internal affairs have to look at that. And when it comes down to it, if the cop is like crazy and acts out emotions and murders people, well, there are penalties for murder, and you got to call it what it is and do something about it. And so I'm seeing it as one piece, and I see it coming particularly after 9/11, and I see it going throughout the culture and our obeisance to authority figures, and we really, yes, respect police officers, but respect police officers who are murderers? No, we don't do that. There's got to be some lines drawn, and we have to show the police chiefs and the prosecutors and the judges where to draw the lines. They apparently just don't get it. They're too emotionally involved in this stuff. So I see it as one piece, and well, you figure it out. I mean, maybe my sister was right. Maybe I do overanalyze these things, but I see it as all in one piece, and I think that we should do something about it. I think we can. So do your part. I'll do my part, and we can make 2016 maybe with fewer unnecessary corpses. So let's go for that. Thank you. And look at leftahead.com. There'll be a link to the Bowie piece in there. And if I get my guests lined up in the next couple of weeks, I'll put those up there too. So good afternoon.